From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, December 19th, 2025. Home sales were down nearly 12% in Maine last month compared to the previous November. The Maine Association of Realtors says the 43-day government shutdown was partly to blame. Mortgage loans through the Federal Housing Administration, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Department of Veterans Affairs were delayed, as were mortgages dependent on buyers receiving flood insurance. The association says consumer uncertainty during an unsettled fall also slowed down real estate transactions. The median price for a single-family home in November was just under $400,000. That's about 6% below the previous month, when home prices hit an all-time high in Maine. Advocates say proposed federal regulations announced Thursday would make it nearly impossible for transgender youth to receive gender-affirming care, even in states such as Maine, where the services remain legal. Equality Maine's Gia Drew says this is yet another Trump administration attack on transgender people.
If this actually were to go through, it's a cruel attack to use transgender youth in the healthcare they deserve as a lever to cancel all federal money coming to hospitals and clinics that provide medically sound healthcare to transgender people. That is cruel.
The rules would block all Medicaid and Medicare funding to hospitals that provide this care and have already drawn legal challenges. Federal authorities are investigating the school bus crash that killed a 5-year-old student in Standish earlier this week. The National Transportation Safety Board says it's opened a safety investigation into the accident in coordination with the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office and Maine State Police. The agency did not say why it's investigating this particular incident, but in a statement, the NTSB said it routinely investigates road and highway crashes and that school bus safety has been a part of previous reviews. An agency spokesperson said the NTSB is aware of a second fatal school bus accident that occurred recently in Rockland, but could not confirm whether that will also be reviewed separately. A preliminary report from the Standish accident is expected to be available within 30 days. The Richmond School Board voted last night to keep the district's transgender policy in place despite a lawsuit from the Maine Human Rights Commission. Richmond's policy states that students must use the restroom, locker room, and play on the sports team that aligns with their biological sex. School board member Russell Hughes says he's concerned about the cost of fighting the lawsuit, but believes it is a matter of principle.
Until about a year ago, everybody knew federal law superseded state law, and somehow that doesn't apply anymore. I think our policy as written now is on the right side of the law. It's the right side of history. It's right side of public opinion, and it's on the right side of morality.
Three school board members voted in favor of the policy, while two voted against, citing concerns about the cost of litigation and the public pushback against it. With all the rain today, it's easy to forget that Maine is in a drought, but the latest report from the U.S. Drought Monitor shows the entire state is still in moderate, severe, or extreme drought conditions. And Nick Stasulis of the U.S. Geological Survey and the Maine Drought Task Force says we're in it for the long haul.
If we look back to the beginning of the summer, I think some parts of the state maybe are a foot of rain below normal.
Though today's storm may have a small but positive impact in southern Maine, Stasulis says the ground in northern Maine is already frozen, which means rain won't be able to replenish groundwater there. Rain and high winds closed many of Maine's ski trails today. The National Weather Service says some central Maine and downeast regions could see gusts of up to 60 miles per hour. Heavy rainfall is affecting snow buildup on some hills, such as Saddleback Mountain and Rangeley, though marketing director Ethan Austin says man-made snow can withstand the moisture.
Looks like we're getting back into cold weather tomorrow morning, and we'll be grooming and making snow and having everything ready to go for the vacation weeks coming up.
Lost Valley and Pleasant Mountain are closed due to wind, but will reopen tomorrow. Mount Abram postponed its opening day for the season to Saturday. Sunday River had 8 of its 19 lifts open today, but warned of wet and rainy conditions in its daily mountain report. Business groups in Maine say the Trump administration's new restrictions on immigrant work permits are hurting the state's economy. During a virtual press conference Thursday, Ben Conniff with Luke's Lobster says immigrant workers are vital to the state's seafood processing industry.
If an administration wants to be pro-business, wants to care about affordability, wants to keep the economy moving and does not appreciate needless red tape, then they will absolutely walk back these new rules.
In addition to shortening eligibility periods and ending automatic extensions, the Trump administration is reportedly considering an indefinite pause on work permit processing altogether for asylum seekers. The cost of running Maine's 15 county jails has been going up for years, driven by a combination of state mandates and rising expenses. County officials say they're scrambling to fill budget gaps that could result in sharp property tax increases. As Michael Livingston reports, some are calling for the state to offer relief, while advocates say they want to see fewer people held in Maine's jails to begin with.
It's well past 8 o'clock in the Penobscot County Courthouse in Bangor. Members of the county's budget committee, including Ellen Campbell, are growing frustrated with the task at hand, trimming down an already lean county budget.
I do not feel that I can vote on any of it.
The committee is dealing with a $7 million deficit, half of which is from the Penobscot County Jail. And former County Administrator Bill Collins warned the committee that any surplus funds have all been used.
There is no more money to take. So you can go through your exercise tonight, and I respect it, but you are not going to find $3+ million.
Left unsolved, the deficit could result in a sizable property tax increase for more than 150,000 residents. But jail funding troubles aren't unique to Penobscot County.
Sheriffs from three Maine counties say their jails are undersized and outdated. They are urging county leaders to build a regional jail.
Washington County is facing a financial crisis after years of budget
mismanagement. The Knox County Jail will soon become a holding facility, while long-term prisoners from the county will be sent.
Officials are raising concerns after a second consecutive year of reduced state funding for the county jail system.
Administrators say jail costs are being driven in large part by state requirements and a cap on the county jail operations fund that now only covers around 15% of all operational expenses. Meanwhile, cost of providing health care for inmates is one of the fastest growing line items in jail budgets. Last fiscal year, the Penobscot County Jail spent nearly $2.5 million on medical care for inmates. Maine care recipients lose their benefits upon arrest, so the cost for things like surgery, dental care, or transportation to local hospitals then shifts to the county. Of the roughly 1,600 people booked in Maine's county jails right now, roughly 75% require some kind of mental health or substance use treatment.
You may have never been in jail, but you've probably been to a hospital. And if you look at the county jail, it is run much like the emergency room of a hospital.
That's Penobscot County Sheriff Troy Morton.
You don't know who's coming in, when they're coming in, and what condition they are when they're there. It's often some of the most expensive care there is because people are in critical conditions.
At the same time, Maine has a large backlog of criminal court cases, which is leading to longer holding times in jails and overcrowding. Morton says one of the largest line items on the jail budget, over $2.5 million, is the cost of boarding inmates in other facilities. He says it's a common issue in most rural counties.
It's frustrating from our end because we've been continuing to voice this over and over. Perhaps the urgency will now pique the interest of others, and we can come together to figure out a way to appropriately fund this without simply doing it through property tax.
Several bills aimed at bolstering jail funding, including one that would add around $8 million to the operations fund, have been floated in recent years. Tim Curtis is leading those efforts for the County Corrections Professional Standards Council. He says now that jails serve as the emergency room of the criminal justice system, they should have adequate funding to provide those services.
The state dictates the laws, dictates the court system, dictates the standards by which the jails must operate. Wouldn't you think the state would pay more than 15% of the cost?
Meanwhile, some advocates say the answer isn't just more money. Doug Dunbar leads a group that opposes a plan to build a larger Penobscot County jail. He says the root cause of most criminal activity are substance abuse and mental health disorders, and that funding efforts should focus on creating community treatment centers.
You know, we've come to think of jails as places where people are supposed to languish for months and months and months and months, and that was never the idea behind jails.
After watching the Penobscot County Budget Committee meeting, one resident said she worries that living in rural Maine is about to get much harder.
Virtually everybody I know will be impacted.
Susan Lessard is a former bookkeeper for several nearby municipalities.
Whether you are a renter and your rent has to go up to accommodate property taxes that your landlord is has to pay. If there are large tax increases at the local county level, nobody escapes.
The Penobscot County Commission will meet on December 23rd with the goal of cutting $1 million from the proposed budget. And even then, taxpayers could see a double-digit percent increase in the cost of their county government. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
On Thursday, President Trump took a major step toward reclassifying marijuana as a less dangerous drug at the federal level. The shift could open the door for more scientific research and provide significant tax relief to cannabis businesses in Maine and in other states where marijuana is legal. But as Kevin Miller reports, there are also questions about how the change will be implemented.
Trump's executive order doesn't legalize marijuana or cannabis at the federal level. But by directing federal agencies to redesignate marijuana from a Schedule 1 drug to Schedule 3, cannabis would be treated more like anabolic steroids or Tylenol with codeine, rather than highly addictive illicit drugs such as heroin and LSD. This shift could have significant federal tax and financial benefits for licensed cannabis businesses in Maine, where medical marijuana has been legal for a quarter century and where voters legalized adult recreational use of cannabis in 2016.
It's about time that, you know, we hope to see federal legalization someday, but this is certainly a step in the right direction.
Hannah King is a Portland-based attorney who specializes in cannabis law and regulations with the national firm Dentons.
It really will, I mean, across the spectrum from mom and pop to large kind of publicly traded company, provide really important tax relief that will enable them to, you know, pay their employees, expand their operations, do really, really important things that are going to benefit the communities where they operate.
Because the drug is currently Schedule 1, state-licensed cannabis businesses are not allowed to deduct standard operating expenses and make other adjustments to lower their tax burden. King helped push through a recent change in state law that allows cannabis businesses to make those deductions on state taxes. But she says some of her clients are currently paying an effective federal tax rate of 80%.
So I think that you will see companies be able to use that additional cash flow, one, to acquire other companies, to kind of acquire new retail locations, to build out their cultivation, to maybe move into other states. Things that they've wanted to do for a long time but haven't had the cash flow available to be able to execute on.
Legal sales of medical and recreational marijuana topped $500 million in Maine last year for the first time. While recreational sales seem to plateau this year at $500 million, cannabis is still a major growth industry for Maine.
Every other business gets these tax deductions, so that would go a long way for these business owners to try to keep up in this economy.
Representative David Boyer helped lead the 2016 legalization campaign. He now represents part of Androscoggin County in the Maine House and is the ranking Republican on the legislative committee that oversees cannabis regulation. Like King, Boyer sees relaxation of federal tax rules as potentially opening the door to Maine cannabis exports to other states with legal markets.
Just like we like wine varietals from Napa or Washington State, folks like Maine's cannabis, just like they like Maine's craft brewing.
It was the administration of President Joe Biden, not Trump, that began the reclassification process more than 2 years ago. Trump's executive order frames the rescheduling entirely around the potential medical benefits of marijuana and CBD, saying, quote, "The federal government must improve the research infrastructure for medical marijuana to better serve Americans." Dr. Patty Hymanson, a neurologist and former state lawmaker from York, says there is no widespread accepted medical use of cannabis. And a big reason for that, Hymanson says, is marijuana's Schedule 1 designation, which prevented robust, peer-reviewed scientific research. So she says redesignating medical marijuana could change that.
It does open the door for that. And I think that would be really welcome for people to really understand, does it help a specific symptom and how much?
But Hymanson, who often dealt with cannabis policy as a former co-chair of the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee, sees reclassification as potentially replacing old problems with new ones. For instance, Schedule 3 drugs require prescriptions written by medical professionals with a license from the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency. Those prescriptions, Hymanson says, are then filled by licensed pharmacists dispensing very specific doses of tightly regulated pharmaceutical drugs.
I'm not sure how cannabis from your local medical cannabis store is going to be a Schedule 3 drug. Those all need prescriptions from a provider with a DEA license.
Maine's Office of Cannabis Policy had no immediate comment on the executive order. But in 2024, the office issued a statement saying that the Biden administration's push to reclassify the drug would not likely trigger any changes to the state's regulation of medical and recreational cannabis programs. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.